I thought the last point I would make before I hand over to Gregor, just conscious of the time, is to talk a little bit more about notions of Māori sovereignty. Again, I think most students are quite comfortable when it comes to talking about the kingitanga, talking about, you know, why it's established and its particular history and role. But it's some of those other organisations, some of those other things that emerge in the last sort of decade or so of the 19th century that I thought I might spend a little bit of time talking about now. The Kohanganui, for instance, which is the kingitanga's parliament. And of course, the other big one of that time is the Kotahitanga, the unity movement. And that is established by which iwi in particular? I mean, if we were to categorise them, we've got the Kingitanga and his and the notion of the Kohanganui, the Great Chief's Council, which is like the Kingitanga Parliament. Kotahitanga, they set up their own parliament, which are referred to as Parimata Māori, their own separate parliaments. But that organisation is set up by what sort of Māori? The ones we generally refer to as kūpapa. Most Māori who get involved in the Kotahitanga movement, which is established in 1892, are from iwi that, if not supportive of the Crown through the 19th century, were at least neutral. Now, if you were to make a guess in the 1890s about our friend Seddon here, and his attitude to either of these organisations, which one do you think he would fear the most? It's the Kotahitanga movement that worries the Liberals the most. The fear is, because the Kotahitanga movement wants, on one, as its number one objective, wants the honouring of the Treaty of Waitangi. And in honouring the Treaty of Waitangi, wants to basically end land sales. And this is of great concern to the likes of Seddon, because, of course, these are people that in the past he would have seen as being the sort who would have supported them. So the Kotahitanga actually is of great concern to the Liberal government of the day, who they see as representing, obviously, a greater threat. So in your revision, I recommend that you spend a little bit of time going back through your notes or going through your texts and reading a little bit more about the Kotahitanga. But it seems to be one of those organisations that, or one of those movements that a lot of people mention in passing at the end of a paragraph. Oh, by the way, there was the Kotahitanga. Go back and spend a little bit of time looking at it, okay? Even if you've got to do a little bit of searching online, because I think it's something that we have tended to gloss over, and I think it's really important. Seddon refused to recognise it, refused to recognise something that he saw that had a structure that mirrored the House of Representatives. It had a Prime Minister, it had committees, it had people elected from different regions. And instead of seeing this kind of, you know, this copying of the settler system as something to be flattered by, he didn't want a bar of it. There's only one parliament in this country, and that's the House of Representatives. And he doesn't want a bar of it also because he's not willing to accept its calls to honour the Treaty of Waitangi and to halt land sales. In one of its last meetings of the 19th century, a chap from the East Coast turns up to speak at the Kotahitanga, a guy by the name of Apurana Nata. Now, most of us who have done Year 11 history will remember Nata as one of the leading lights of the Young Māori Party. But again, we tend to put that into Year 11 and we say, oh yeah, Young Māori Party have got nothing to do with the 19th century topic. Nothing could be further from the truth. So go to the Dictionary of New Zealand Biography and spend some time reading Nata's biography, okay? Because Nata's role at the end of our period is quite crucial. Of he and some of his buddies who had alienated a lot of the older leaders involved in groups like the Kotahitanga, who felt that these young whippersnappers were sort of telling them what to do, turns up to one of the Kotahitanga meetings in 1897 and informs those there that there is another Kotahitanga, there's another unity movement, and that is the Te Oti College Students Association, the forerunner to the Young Māori Party. It makes it clear to this older generation of Māori leaders that the new generation is here, the guys who are going to be seen in Parliament dressed like this, but on another level still working to make sure that, you know, Māori have a place in the sort of New Zealand that is actually emerging. And I want to read something to you that he wrote not long after this. You'll know that Ngāt is the first Māori graduate, becomes a lawyer, okay? And he was writing a letter to Peter Buck, one of his mates from Te Aotea. And if you had done fifth form year 11 history, I'm sure you're aware of Peter Buck. But this is an extract from a letter that he wrote. And he's saying to Buck, "Our circle will then be fairly complete. Hector, Kōhere and Bennett, Parsons, Hay and myself, lawyers, you and Tuteri, doctors. We, the Parsons and lawyers, will do the talking and some practical work for you that come after. It is ours to remove prejudice, to argue out of existence fallacious doctrines, to lay the foundations for a healthier, more compact, more powerful social opinion among our people, that your future work may be easy. I only wish you had your MB or MD now, and you could come with me to begin the fieldwork of the association, to devote ourselves body and soul to it." And I think it's that kind of optimistic tone of Ngāta, I think, is a really interesting way of kind of maybe presenting this idea of there's a kind of light at the end of the tunnel, that amidst all the sort of devastation and destruction that we generalise about the 19th century experience for Māori, is, I guess, another form of agency where, you know, people like Ngāta and his colleagues have sort of seized the day, have offended some of their own leaders by being a bit brash and a bit sort of, you know, the way that younger people can be a little bit impulsive, and occasionally they get slapped down. But the way in which, come the late 1890s, they're willing to kind of grab hold of things and say, you know, we're the way forward. People who have gained this level of education, people who have been able to sort of see through all these other issues and actually start to do something about it. And so if you've done that Year 11 course and you remember stuff about the Young Māori Party, go back and look at it again, because these guys are really active towards the end of our topic. And I just think some in the past, the essays that I've read, often it's that kind of last part where I think people fall over a bit, because maybe we haven't looked at that liberal era or the 1890s enough. So I think in terms of that kind of Māori expression of a sort of a sense of identity and way forward, it's really important to actually go back and look at that. So I don't want to sound like some Pollyanna, because we can't hide the fact that for a lot of Māori, the 19th century is about devastation, is about loss. But I think it's important to just keep it in perspective, that there are also new forms of leadership which are going to help Māori into the 20th century.